I believe you just mentioned that there was some talk about Bill Weimer coming back to get his car, and you just handed me a card. Can you explain what that card is about?
Yeah, Bill wrote a phone number on his phone and gave it to me. It's from Scott Whitman Service in Fayetteville. And this may be who had his car. He had it fixed. I don't know why I have to use it. And it was after the car.
Now, the writing on the back says Mary 575-4732. Do you know what the symbol is?
That's a girl, I believe, in Rogers, Arkansas. And I think her name is Mary Benton. You remember?
Yes.
You know her name? I believe Mary Benton. And she must live at home because I think she's only 17 or 18 years old. And Rogers is real small. I don't think any apartments in that town for her to live by herself.
Was she supposed to get his car or anything?
No. This Mary had called me a couple of times when Bill wanted to call my house, and he didn't want to call because he and my parents didn't get along, and he thought it'd be wiser for somebody else to call him next time, and he had this girl call from Rogers, and he was still staying in Arkansas for the world.
Well, his car is supposed to be fixed by now, is that right?
Yeah, it should have been fixed 2 or 3 weeks ago.
What's his car look like?
It's a new Toyota Celica. Toyota.
New year. What's this 72?
Because he had just bought it when he had car.
You don't call her interior?
Yeah. And got wood, the dash on it, or wood thing. I thought it was plastic, but it was plastic. His dog, what is his dog?
He came to the phone. Did he mention his dog in the phone call today?
No, I don't think he was dog with him. Because he, he usually mentioned.
That's kind of strange to
say. He may like to meet his parents, though. He's there in Pittsburgh,
You know,
but he had mentioned Tasha Lane.
Did he mention his parents?
Yeah, he said that people had been calling his parents, trying to find out where he was. He mentioned that people he hadn't seen in 4 years were suddenly calling his parents, trying to find out where he was. His mother wasn't telling me anymore.
That she knew?
I presume she knew. From the way he talked, he didn't say specifically. He sounded like him when he called her. Mm-hmm.
Well,
there was a mix-up on Danny's car, too. And it wasn't going to be there for a few weeks ago. Because he thought they might replace the whole car and then the insurance company wouldn't do it. They were going to have it fixed. It was in pretty bad shape.
What else did y'all talk about during the school call?
I know there was more than 1.5 hours. Bill and my dad didn't get along at all. Because we'd gotten arrested together and then we were in a car wreck together. And things just started out real bad. And Bill didn't like to be around him at all. And that one time it came to me, and I was like, after the rest of my dad, it was so
short. What kind of drugs did you use?
I didn't see any of any drugs.
Not even just pills?
No, nothing.
Just pills?
No. So I asked him about that too. Yeah, that's one thing I asked about the last time he called. Because when we were in jail together, Bill had gotten sick. And when we were transferred from Midwest City down to Upland County, Montana City, he looked really bad when he was born. And then he had some of his girls waiting in the cell, and then the guys would go out and look at him and say, "I didn't know before we all got hit down." And I asked Bill what was wrong, and he said he was sick. And then I heard later that, the guards had come and given him some pills, which we all got with him, and he was trying to do no jealousy. That was one thing that made people suspicious, was why he was allowed to have pills and nobody else was. So I asked him about that, because the way he looked, it just looked to me like he was, you know, like it was withdrawal from something. I mean, he looked so bad, and his eyes looked so terrible. And he was running the reason. And then somebody came, I guess it was Kevin, had seen the pills that the guard dropped him. He said they were about bitches. So that's one thing I asked him when he was trying to tell him to tell me the truth. You know, are you strung out or something? And is that one thing that the FBI has used on you to get you to do things? And he laughed and he said no. And I asked him, I think it was the first thing to do, and he just laughed and said no. And I didn't know anything stupid was in a heavy dose, and it had really been strung out and withdrawn. So that's what it looked like.
Did he tell you anything about the person?
Yeah. The only thing he said was that he won't see some harder in my room. So, I think he needs to learn.
Did you talk to him at all?
Not for this part.
When did you talk to him prior to him proceeding?
The last time we came down.
Bill came and he told us this wild story about he told Mike a little bit different story than he told me with him. They told me that BVAW was planning to dump off McGovern and say that the government condemned the FBI and the CIA, everybody and their brother and the government, that they were the ones who killed McGovern. And that it was actually going to be BVAW. And that the BVAW people were going to say that Bill had been the one to do the actual shooting. They were going to blame it on him as being the sniper who got the gun. And I thought, well, okay, they know this.
So we told the friend, and the friend went to the FBI.
FBI, I told the FBI.
And the FBI might have been.
Well, I just wanted to know what we heard. We just got the last name. Yeah. Asked about Scott.
When was this?
And another thing is that Scott Camille, that wasn't his real name, he was an immigrant. They didn't know where it's from or about that.
Why didn't you tell me all that?
Did you make a sign? Did they write down what you said?
They took notes.
They took notes.
Did they ask you to sign
notes?
No.
And there was Secret Service agents there in there too.
They came to my house because they, wanted to talk to Mark, and then he called me sometimes. And I said, well, they probably don't even believe you that Bill told us this. the Army calling at the back of their school so that they know that if they don't believe us, at least they think there's two in the back instead of one. So I called them up, and they called me back, and then they didn't even come see me for about a week. They didn't even hear about it apparently for a week. And then they finally came up, and two FBI agents.
You know their name?
Dallas and...
How do you spell Dallas? Is it two words, Dallas?
Said, well, he wants to talk to you about something else too. And I said, well, what's that? And Anthony kept it from him too. And he said, oh, something like that. If VVOW was really going to bump off me together and stop doing things like that, could I go along with that kind of thing? And I said, well, no, frankly, I couldn't, you know. I'm sorry. And I said, that's a stupid idea in the first place. That's a dumb way to do it. And you know, people find out if VVOW did do that, and people find out and make them madder than ever. And I said, nobody would stick up for VVOW. And I said, that's like committing suicide to call something like that. And then he said, well, with me gone and not being able to, you know, freely come here to Oklahoma, and because the people knew who he was, he said it very subtly, that it was like they were going to need somebody here who knew all the people who would give the FBI information. And I said, well, so he kind of, you know, very subtly said that's the only thing that agent wanted to talk to me about. And I thought, well, this whole thing sounds really strange. Because I just didn't need the FBI recruiting informant that way and having gone to Arkansas. And I said, I want you to tell me the truth now. I said, is this dude the only one talking to me? Or are you just feeling lonely and you'd like me to come to Arkansas with you? He said, no, I'm not that tired. He said, I thought you said it was good. He said, sure, I'd like to have you over there. He said, that's not the point. And I said, well, I'm not going. He said, I'm going to go home if I can. That's what I do. And I said, I'm not going to leave and have them in my room. I said, the last two times I had to come home, once I already left and the other time I was in the car wreck. And I said, they're a little hysterical if I don't come up. So I went on home and I told them, they said, leave, leave, call me as they can be. And my dad was in Northern College for 10 years. He had many dealings with the FBI and that's how it worked. And Daddy said that just didn't right. He said if they weren't doing anything, all they'd be was feeling and help out of this stuff. And then, you know, when you were just thinking about it, he said, they don't want that one. So I went and told Bill. And Daddy said there's something wrong here. And he said, why don't you tell me about it? And he was really insistent, and he wanted me to go with him. And I started getting more suspicious. It's a heck of a good way for somebody to put me away for 6 months and break in probation, you know, if I was a state. And I told Bill, I said, if you really want me to go, and if you don't have to convince me, then and so Bill actually went over to my house and talked to my father, which floored me because he didn't want to be with me. And Daddy asked him how much he had insisted on me and I all the way around within 5 minutes. And then, oh, well, first Bill said it was, you know, officially the FBI. No, it really wasn't. It was just his agent that kind of wanted to see me. And he said, well, I don't think it works that way. That works.
What's your father think of DWP?
I didn't say nothing. He just said, well, let me see what happens. And I left lunch and I said, well, Daddy, if you're depending on Bill's testimony, I said, he's changed his story so many times. And I said, any halfway decent lawyer can turn old Bill into much of a thing. And Daddy just laughed and he said, yeah, I think so too. He said, well, at first when I told my dad that I thought Bill worked for the FBI, my dad was just really indignant. And he said, no, he said, I don't think they'd hire anybody like him. That he's not very together about anything. But Daddy finally did come to play this way and actually talked to him. He still just came to play and hired me somebody like Bill. He said I would address it and it would be an informant for me and I would be able to.
We're almost done with this table. I'm done with this one. I'm going to take a break. Let me get back again to these last couple of questions. Is there anything you can remember about it? Yeah. Talk about your purpose. What can you talk about?
Yeah,
it's good to
me. You know what's favorite in today's life, or anything that I know. So I don't know if I'm going to get to the well, that one was a very good time. And when I met him, he and Tammy was married. And somebody was all over the door and he came out. But so I asked him, from the way he talked and what the people told me to do, it was him before I came back along for quite some time. It's been a long time. And Bill just apparently didn't want to come out and ask for a divorce. He was hoping that she would want to live on her own. And apparently he didn't.
Do you have any kind of religious
No, but one night though, we went over to some friends of mine who had just come in as real Jesus Christ with the Children of God people. And Bill was really kind of getting into that.
And there was one time when he was going to hitchhike out of here.
Yeah.
He was going to a religious festival in Colorado.
Yeah. So he, you know, his friends and my father too, we were over there for hours, and they had just gotten into this, so they were telling us all about. And Bill was really good at that, you know, he said something about how easy it would be for him to get into that kind of thing if there was much work.
Did he mention anything like that to him?
No. That was really the only time.
He didn't really want to study this, did he? That's why he started to move.
Yeah, but you know,
did he ever say anything about the people fighting for the people?
That was the one thing Billy didn't want to talk about.
He talked about feeling doctors.
Yeah, he was in jail.
It'll be a couple. No one's going to come out.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to
do it. Yeah, I know, but this will be. Did he ask any questions about things that have been going on for you?
No.
Did he ever mention anything to you about bombs?
We've talked about setting up caches around have parts of the island with food and weapons and everything.
He talked to me kind of generally, not at any specific time or anything like that. The person to me was doing it back to me. He was still fine. And I think, he was doing this in Canada. And I laughed and said something like, yeah, it must have been women that did it since it was in the ladies' bathroom. The bomb was left, and I said, the government never expects anything like that. And he was kind of laughing. He was kind of asking me, you know, I kind of felt that bomb was left. Guerrilla activity was kind of normal, but nothing specific. And then at one time, Well, Bill was called Michael. He was a gunman. He never said, but right after we got out of jail, and he had come back just a couple of days later, and we were working on the children. We had to come back, and we were just sitting talking. And I said something to him. I said, you know, everybody picks you up for the rest of your life. He said, real serious. He said, after we all got out of jail. And he said, oh, that makes me nervous. And I said, well, why? And he said, everybody gets it. And he said, it makes me mad because these people just don't know what I'm going to do. Send him to the association. People who know from home and show me from the administration and stuff like that. Other countries and things are vastly ahead of us here. And then he said, you know what I really do? I said, no, I don't know what to do. And he said, well, I run business. But he had been around before that he worked for the FBI. After they was out of the jail, he was broadly suggesting that. I mean, Bill never really tried to hide it from me. Because that was only, the same day I got out of jail. He told me.
In the last two phone conversations, he discussed all his alternatives in the present situation. He continued to split and just go on.
Yeah, but he knows that's not right. Because he mentioned that, I told him. He figured the lawyers, you people who represented people that had you, it wasn't for him. And he said they finally met the whole FBI and gone too.
So you know the names of any of the others that were
found? I don't know if he did or not. I imagine he did.
You mentioned any?
No.
What's your guess? Did you guess that he's going to go home or something?
I imagine he is. Because I think Bill is in a situation where the only advice he's getting is from the FBI. And I think he's afraid of me. If he turns to me, I know he is. From the
FBI.
This is Clyde Ellis. I'm in Tulsa, Oklahoma, with Mike Wade, Christy, and Holly. And last night I was talking to Christy and Mike about some experience they've had with Bill Lehman. And I'd like to ask both Christy and Mike now if there's anything that they've thought of since last night to elaborate upon what we were talking about. Okay.
I didn't really come up with anything from that last conversation. I remember a lot of things that went on before that, except that I did remember then that Bill had given me an address, which I'd given to you.
Did you remember anything about the name Carl Becker?
No, I thought about that, and I just can't come up with any association for it, even though it sounds familiar.
I'm now reading over some notes I made last night to see if there's anything specific that I need to see if I can call back to the memory. You mentioned last night that you said that other people besides himself would be testifying. Have you never really mentioned any names or numbers about that?
No, he didn't mention any names. Or he said there were other witnesses, plural, and that was it.
Okay. Now, the address he gave you, did he say anything about that address? Like, that's just a place to find him, or if you wanted to come up, or you wanted to mail him something, or any specific at all about that?
No, just if I wanted to write him, that was the place to send a letter to. I got the impression it was the apartment he was talking about, but then I thought he'd said he was living in Cheyenne, so I really don't know whether that's the apartment where he was staying or not.
Do you know Diane Wolf?
I don't think so.
I'm going to ask you another name. Do you know a David Rosen?
No.
These are people living in Denver now.
Okay. Diane Wolf, yeah. Okay, she was in on the Denver deal. I called up there one night and talked to her, I believe.
Do you know anything else about
him? No.
Oh, one thing I should ask you about. Did I take that card for the garage last night?
I'm not real sure whether you did or not. It wasn't lingering when we left, but then I know I put it back in my wallet.
Because I couldn't find it. And if I took it, it popped up again.
If it's not in my wallet, then you took it. No, here it is.
Do you mind if I take it?
No, you don't have that.
Do you remember anything else you talked about during the last phone call?
Not anything specific, because we talked kind of in general about him testifying and how he felt about it, but nothing specific, or Bill never mentioned any names, either, even the defendants, other than, the only two people he ever talked to me about were Scott Cameron and John Nicholson, and those other names were just a blank to me when they read them to me.
What would you say he talked about most of the time? I think he told me that he talked about himself most of the time. During the conversation, so can you remember specifically what that was? What were you saying about that?
Oh, kind of in general, just that he was basically confused about everything, And that was obvious from the last time we had seen him here in town. Mike and I could tell he was. He was very shaky and nervous and generally acted like he'd gotten into something he wasn't ready for, that it was just too heavy for him to handle. And then he was really having problems with it. And when Mike and I talked to the FBI, that's one reason we wanted to talk to him, was to tell him how shaky Bill was last time he was here, and couldn't they do something, just to reassure him or calm him down, or he was obviously in a bad way.
What did the FBI say to that when you told them?
They didn't want to listen to it at all. And that was the only thing about the whole interview with them that upset me. They wanted, the first time they came to me when I brought that up, and I know Mike had tried to tell them that too, I got the impression that maybe they just thought we were out to cause trouble for them, and that was it. And they weren't taking this seriously. And they thought it was a good opportunity to ask me about myself and everybody else here in town. And they wanted to talk about things like that more than they wanted to talk about Bill. But, from that last conversation, I don't remember much specific that he was saying, but just that he was confused and he had been thinking about it and just exactly what he was doing and how all this was going to affect the people in Gainesville here on time.
Okay. I'm going to begin now the chronology.
Okay.
And I'm going to take you back from the time you first met Bill Lehmer. Why don't I begin by asking you how you met him?
Okay. I met him at a rally here in town, anti-war rally, at a park on May 3rd, wasn't it, Mike? Because he got arrested the 4th, and that was the next day. So it was the evening of May 3rd, and Bill was one of the people to give a speech that night at the rally. And after it was over, I was standing arguing with two people who had come up to cause a little bit of trouble, and Bill came back and started talking to him also, and kind of taking my side with the two kind of drunk cowboys that were a little, they were raving a little, and Bill came up to help me out, argue back with them. And we started talking, and then Mrs. Willie came up and said we were all supposed to meet at Mike's house later, just to sit around. And Bill asked me if I was hungry, and he and Ann Buford from Fayetteville and I went out and got something to eat, and then we went over to Mike's house. But that's the first time I'd ever seen him or heard of him.
Holly, Ann Buford is a girl from Fayetteville. You couldn't remember her last name.
Right.
Yeah. Well, she uses, I believe, isn't that her married name? And she used her maiden name, too, and I can't remember what that is. I think usually she uses Buford, but sometimes she uses her maiden name. Because I remember Bill, she wrote a big long name, and they were asking her about it, just what exactly her name was.
Did Bill talk with you quite a bit that night at Mike's house, or later?
Yeah, because we took a walk after we'd gotten to Mike's, and we walked around for, it was at least 4 hours, and we talked, the conversation was almost purely political that night about, Bill was asking me how I felt about things, and I was finding out his opinion on things. And that's one thing about Bill, I don't think he's lying at all when he says, you know, he believes, you know, that the government is screwed up on practically everything, or that he believes in socialism, and I don't think Bill's lying on that. That's what's so strange about the whole thing,
because
I'm sure he's sincere that he does, you know, his thinking is very leftist, politicalist.
Well, go ahead and give me some of the things that you remember in your things that you said. What you kind of indicated his political philosophy was. Go ahead and mark your finger.
Oh, okay.
Let's just take it easy.
Well, one thing I really remember him saying was he asked me if I had read the Ramparts article, which mentioned the Rand Corporation study that President Nixon had commissioned on how to put martial law into effect. And Bill was very strongly held the belief that Nixon might actually do something like that. And Mike, did he ever mention that to you? Because he really talked about that a lot that first time I ever talked to him. And that it really freaked him out, you know, to think about it.
Yeah, he said something about that.
Yeah, that's right, he did, that night. And then he talked about it more later to me. And he also talked about it after that another time I saw him.
Well, you mentioned that you kind of got the impression in politics was social. Did you use that word or you talk about it?
I don't think he ever said I'm a socialist, but it was, you know, he talked about, well, one thing he really was into was this, what's the proper name for it, Mike? The medical.
Paramedical.
Yeah, the paramedics. And having, you know, free clinics. And he had been working with something like that in Fayetteville, setting it up where people could come. I think first it was set up just for drug abuse, and then it was expanding into all kinds of things. And Bill always kept his medical kit with him, always. And he told me he'd used it at rock festivals and things like that when people would get sick. And he had said, you know, he was a medic while he was in the service. And like, I know when we were in that car wreck that Bill was taking care of me before the ambulance got there, because I was out cold. But then I found out Bill had pulled me out of the car and, you know, kept my hands away from my face and had known to tell the other people not to move their person if it was hurt and that kind of stuff. So, and I know Bill really believed in that kind of thing, you know, getting community services organized. Because, you know, that's one thing he talked about a whole lot.
Did you say anything else about his politics? Say, what did you bring about for him?
Well, he talked a lot about kind of VBAW and that connection, you know, like that maybe people would listen to people who'd been Vietnam veterans, you know, because they couldn't accuse Vietnam veterans of being cowards like they, you know, could the rest of the left. They couldn't use that argument against them. And that most of the people in VBAW had not been political to begin with, you know, that Vietnam had really brought about a change in them all the way around, and that was kind of the unique thing about VBAW, you know, the organization in itself, was that it wasn't really long-time political people. And what else he would mention that night? I can't think. Do you remember anything else, Mark? Because I know he talked for a long time on all kinds of things. And, I remember him saying that he was convinced that if Nixon did declare martial law, which he really acted like he believed Nixon probably would, not maybe someday would, but like it was an eventuality, that then revolution undoubtedly would break out. And he kept saying that VBAW was getting ready for it. And like with things like the, you know, the paramedics, getting ready to take care of the people when all hell broke loose. And when the systems were broken down, somebody had to step in there to just take care of basic needs for people.
Did you mention any other ways VBAW might be getting ready for that eventuality, just the declaration of martial law?
Maybe that. He said that the people were getting on the cash.
Yeah, I think he talked about that.
I talked about the cash before you talked about that in Oklahoma. And at one time he did say something about bringing some stuff to martial law. I can't remember supplies or if it was cannabis.
Did he talk about starting with the cash?
Yeah.
Where did he talk about having
I believe he said he had some, or they were talking about having some, or they had already had some set around in that area of the mountain. And that's where we were going to have ours and skills.
And I remember that night he asked me how I felt about bombings and things like that. I mean, he didn't ask me to store anything for him, and I'm sure I must have mentioned to him that I didn't know anything about guns in the first place, and I'd be completely useless with one, you know. But I remember he asked me about bombings and how I felt about them, and I said, well, I don't know if I could actually do it myself, but I said, it doesn't upset me like if the Pentagon gets blown up. I said, you know, there wasn't any damage to anybody, you know, it was just property and buildings can be rebuilt. So I said, that just didn't upset me very much at all. That he, you know, he talked about that, and that was probably when he told me about the camp that Scott Camille was supposed to have. I'm pretty sure it was, and then the next day he talked about that to me again when we were at the Capitol and we were just walking around and nothing was going on.
What kind of camp was it?
He told me it was a camp in the swamps of Florida that nobody could find. That it was really well hidden out, and that it was a camp training people for guerrilla activity.
He told me that they were training mortar teams and a few other things, and I asked him about it several times. He told me about that same time I'd met him, and he talked a little bit about it, and I saw what they were doing. It was just training, mostly rocket teams and a bunch of mortar teams. I didn't know how much people would have ever been like this.
describe again for me what he said about the arms caches. Did he say he already had any, or he was getting them together?
I'm pretty sure he said that he had done an arms cache. The idea was to get enough around in different places. If you were hitting one place, so it was too risky to go there, you could go somewhere else and have a variety of places.
Didn't mention the types of weapons that they had, or they wanted to have. We talked about getting certain kinds of weapons.
We talked about the big things that happened, and like I said, he tried to sell me one. So he asked me if I wanted to buy one. You know,
okay, let's go ahead to the capital then. What did you talk about with the whatever?
Well, he talked more about the supposed Hanoi trip to me. I guess he must have mentioned it the night before. I know he did in his speech the night before. And I'm pretty sure he talked about it a little bit. And then he told me more about it, and we were just walking around his capital. And that's one thing that I couldn't understand why he was telling me. Because, you know, in his speech, he kept... Well, he gave almost the same speech at the capital that he gave here in Tulsa. And he had said that he couldn't say very much about the Hanoi trip because it was secret, and you know, if the government knew who was supposed to go, they might try and stop it. And what was that phrase he used, Paul? You might remember too, that about bringing back
a message about a little bit of Vietnam.
Yeah, and he kept saying it was something tangible that the VVAW people want to bring back from Hanoi to the American people. Yeah. And then later that afternoon, he told me that, that he thought that what they would bring back would be children from the hospitals in Hanoi who had been injured in the bombings of Hanoi, and bring them here and tell the American people to take care of them and heal them and see if that couldn't bring out a little bit of the humanity of the American people if they were faced with these children. And he told me that, you know, that was supposed to be kept quiet, which I did. I didn't mention that till way after the arrest. And after everybody knew that Bill worked for the FBI. And then I think I finally mentioned it to Ellen, what he had told me. But I didn't say anything to anybody else about it.
Did you say anything else you remember between the time of the Capitol speech and the demonstration?
No, there was one guy at the Capitol, and somebody came up to me and said they thought this guy was a kid, and that he was a CID person. And so I went and mentioned it to Bill and Scott Cade. And Bill started, well, he acted like he was really mad, you know. And he said, well, I'll go take care of it. So he walked over to this guy, and he told me to stay there. So I didn't hear a conversation between the two of them, because I stayed on the steps. It was when we were all leaving, getting ready to go to Tinker, and he walked over to that guy and talked to him. And he kept saying something about, these clowns just kill me, or something like that. It's saying that the guy obviously didn't know what he was doing, and he certainly wasn't a professional about his business, that type of thing, if he'd gotten spotted so quick. And the same guy was out at Tinker later, and Bill turned around to him and said something else, and the guy left before we were all arrested, a few minutes before. But on the way out there, when we got in the car, Bill said something to me about, are you sure you want to go out to Tinker? And I said, yeah, I'm sure, you know. And he said, well, what if something happens, or something like that? And I said, well, if it happens, it happens. You know, it's really all right with me. He said, well, I don't want you to walk into anything you're not ready for. I said, no, I'm fine.
So we went in there then. And one thing about Bill, he'd put on his, you know, fatigues and had his medical bag and his beret on. And whenever he got, you know, the night before he did that too. Whenever he got ready for a rally or something, he really got hippy-trippy about it, kind of, you know. And kind of got into his role, I guess, put on his fatigues. And most of the other VDAW people were just jeans and work shirts and maybe an old fatigue jacket or something. But Bill got in his full regalia. Because when we left for Oklahoma City that morning from Mike's house, you know, he got out all his fatigues. And I said, he left something at the house, a dagger or something, like that. And he had his medical kit and his beret put on.
Yeah, he was showing him out that time, right?
Yeah.
Tell me about Peter.
Well, we just stood around for quite a while, and nobody did much to anything. And we walked up to the guards at the gate and asked them about how we could get onto the base. And they said we had to get permission over at, you know, at a visitor's office there to decide where you'd go and apply for, you know, a temporary pass to go get in. And so Bill and I and Ann Buford walked over there, because Ann had driven down with Bill and me in his car. And we asked permission, and they said that we couldn't get in unless we had a military sponsor. So we walked back out, and this one guy at the Capitol was in the Air Force from Tinker. And then he had shown us the way, as a matter of fact, hadn't he, how to get out into Tinker. Some of the first people that went, he weren't quite sure how to get there. And so we walked over to him and asked him if he would be our military sponsor to get us on base. And he said, yeah, sure. So he walked back to the visitor's office with us. And then they told us that, well, that was too bad. We'd been misinformed and we still couldn't get on base. But they weren't letting anybody on. And there was one woman there who was trying to get on base to get medicine for her husband. And he'd been in Vietnam 3 times, I think, and he was recuperating from being wounded in Oklahoma City. They weren't living on base. And she'd come out there to get medicine, and they weren't going to let her on either. And she was really upset, and so the three of us started sticking up for her and telling the guy to let her in. But that was about it. And then we just walked outside again. Everybody stood around and talked for a while. And well, some guard came over, something went. How do we start shouting slogans at the fence? I don't know. But we started shouting. And everything was just getting kind of dead. You know, nothing was happening anywhere. And Bill came out and said something to me about, well, I think I'm just going to go ahead and walk across. I said, okay, I'm ready for it, I'll go. And so Bill went to several people and told them. And
did you hear anything from anybody else who's overhearing the conversation?
Let's see, I think I heard him talk about it to Mrs. Woodward and to Ann Buford. And then I started talking to Tom Flowers, I think, and then Bill went to some other people. Yeah, that was a definite point, to make it look spontaneous, because if it was planned, then we could have a conspiracy charge come out of it.
So he told you he was going to go across, and did you want to come?
Yeah, he said, I think we ought to do something, you know. He said, I guess I'll walk across. And I said, okay.
Did he ask you to do this?
I don't think he really said, are you, I think he asked Ann, was she going to go across with him? But I think I just agreed to it, you know, right away. I don't think he even, well, I don't think he would have had to ask. But I know, because Ann was debating about whether she was going to go across or not.
What did you
say? Oh, he wasn't, you know, trying to convince her one way or another. He just kind of wanted to know what she was going to do. Then we still didn't know if Ann was going to go across, I don't think, and we walked across. And then I saw Ann come over. But it was really crazy because there was, you know, the white line. They said, don't cross the white line. It was a crosswalk, you know. And we just walked down the road. But gosh, we didn't even. I know, I wasn't on the ground more than a minute before I was hauled out. It couldn't have been much longer than a minute.
When did you next do after you left?
When I was being transferred to Oklahoma County Jail. But we could, you know, we could talk back and forth in the jail because the ventilating system. And the women on our side, we'd get up and holler through the vents, you know. We could talk to the guys, and Bill was in a cell by himself, though.
He was with someone
else. Oh, he was? Because somebody, you know, I hollered over there, and they said, well, he was asleep, you know.
He was in a little small cell.
With the Jim Crimes.
He wasn't called
out. Oh, okay. Then I didn't see him until we were being transferred, and they brought Bill and Randy and I think Patrick and I think the guy's name is Danny was the kind of, yeah, I think it was him, and they were the last guys to be transferred. So we saw them just for a minute.
You talked to Bill?
Yeah, because, like, we were in a little cell. They were keeping us in this little cell until they brought the guys out, too, and they figured out who was going in which deputy's car and which marshal's car down in jail. And so we were all talking to the guys, and Tom Flower was there. And we were asking them how they were, you know, and they walked over to us, you know, and we could kind of halfway hug them, you know, that type of thing. And the guards got real mad because we were touching each other, and they start screaming. They quit that was a no-no. Between bars, it was a little hard to get much more than a pat in, you know. But that's when I saw Bill when he looked really bad, you know, and I asked him what was wrong. He just said he was sick, but he didn't feel good.
He asked you to get it.
No, uh-uh. And we were, you know, they were bringing out our property to us to take with us to be transferred. And they just handed Bill his medical kit. And that was one thing that was strange because when we all got arrested, I thought Bill's just going to get it. That thing is a bust, you know, because I know he had syringes in it because I'd seen it at Mike's house. And he had all kinds of drugs in there. I mean, everything in the book, from cold medicine to, you know, first aid creams. I mean, just everything. And he even had a small oxygen thing, didn't he? Yeah, because he talked about that at Mike's house.